extremely important man who was working for Palestinian rights, for justice, for peace.
Right.
He was working to bridge the differences being created by Israel partisans between Americans and Iran, between Christians and Muslims. This man was a brilliant and important personage, and I grieve for his loss. I think the whole world has experienced a loss by his passing.
Yes, indeed. So 30 seconds to answer my question, and we can finish off the spotlight. Go ahead.
More and more Americans are waking up to this. The Israel lobby remains very, very powerful in the United States, in the government, and in the media, in Hollywood, of course. But there are many, but it's eroding. More people are waking up. More young Jewish Americans see Israel as an apartheid regime that they oppose. So I think the awareness is growing. It's a matter of grassroots against the elites, and I
Indeed.
Think the grassroots eventually will win.
People power. We'll see what happens. Thank you. Allison Muir from Sacramento, founder of Americans New. And Amal Wadan, thank you, from Occupied Ramallah, Palestinian human rights advocate. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikva Tarway. It's goodbye until next time.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atar, the host of this program. This series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with the speeches and thoughts of the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, also known as Imam Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Ali and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
So, and Shaykh Ali, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, very recently, in one of the speeches of Imam Khamenei, he talked about a very important concept, which is Jihad-e-Tabyin. And so many people in Iran, inside Iran and outside Iran, were shocked by this, we can say, type of look at the world and at the concept of jihad. Because this is the first time that this term has been coined by the Rahbar, and he used it. So now there are so many, we can say, explanations, commentaries and interpretations written on this concept. Of course, Rahbar in his speech gave us a very nice framework for Jihad-e-Tabyin. But this is good to be more familiar with this concept, maybe for the English-speaking people all around the world through this radio show, Viewpoints. So for today's discussion, we want to talk about the correct methodology of practicing Jihad-e-Tabyin, also the tools which are required for this type of jihad. Sheikh Ali, let's start with you, brother. First of all, what is the method or methodology of Jihad-e-Tabyin?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As we have discussed before previously, that Jihad-e-Tabyin is the jihad of clarification, the jihad of explanation. And we have said that the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has announced it to be in context of the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic system, that pure Muhammadan Islam, that is the extension of the movement of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Now, discussing about this methodology of Jihad-e-Tabyin, there are, like in every other field, there could be different classifications and different ways
yes.
one can approach this divine jihad. But one thing that has to be there is the element of enemy,
mm-hmm.
right? So the first and foremost ingredient of this methodology is recognizing the enemy, who the true enemy is. Unfortunately, sometimes because of our shallow understandings, we kind of, you know, decide an enemy
yes.
for ourselves, which is not really the enemy of Islam.
Rahbar has called us Dushman Shenasi.
Dushman Shenasi, right? Recognizing the right enemy. So I'm gonna speak about four points when it comes to the methodology of Jihad-e-Tabyin.
Okay.
So first one is recognizing the enemy. The second one is noting down the propaganda of the enemy, where they're attacking.
Okay.
Number three is research for truth. And number four is engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, like we already said, you know, dissecting different layers of enemies. You know, when we talk about enemy, it's not just this one monotonous and one singleton body.
Yes.
No, it is a multi-layered phenomena. Some enemies are your staunch enemy, really staunch enemy. Some are, you know, milder than the staunch enemy. So there's a tashkik, there's a gradability that exists when it comes to enemy and recognizing the enemy. So for someone who is engaged in Jihad-e-Tabyin, it's important to take a look at all of those layers of the enemies and select the layer that he can engage at. That's the first one.
And the enemy you are talking about is the enemy of Islam.
It's the enemy of Islam,
but not the
enemy
of the different interpretation of Islam, is it?
No, see, enemy of Islam, when we talk about the enemy, right, whose job is it to declare an enemy? Uh-huh. Let's go back to the time of Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, right? Because this is our point where we begin.
Yes.
It's the Prophet of Islam who defines who the enemy at that time is, right?
Yeah.
Similarly, you go through the times of Imams, it's the Imam of the time who defines who the enemy today is.
Yes.
And now you come to the era of Wilayatul Faqih, which is the extension of Imamah and Wilayah of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. So today, the Waliul Faqih, the Wali Amr al-Muslimin, the leader of the Islamic Ummah, he defines who the enemy is. And today it's Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei who defines who today's enemy is, right?
Okay.
So this is recognizing and dissecting different layers of the enemies.
Yes.
Number two is noting down the propaganda of the enemy. Remember we said previously that jihad has to be in response to an enemy. If it's not in response to an enemy, it's not Jihad-e-Tabyin in this context.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a good thing to do, but nothing of this category that we're discussing today.
Yes.
Identifying the lies of the enemies. What are the points that they're lying about? So if I were to make it a bit more tangible, you know, in times of this war on Syria.
Yes.
Right? They said, oh, Bashar al-Assad, you know, he is doing this. Bashar is doing this with his people. You know, lies and propaganda through mainstream media, right? So at that point, it is important to know where the enemy is attacking us. Right. And then getting into this whole arena of clarification and defending those points where the enemy is attacking us.
Yes.
Then identifying the schemes and plots of the enemy. It's important. You know, it's not just one act or one statement. No, you need to look at the holistic picture, their framework. Because at the end of the day, when the enemy plans to attack us, they have this whole you know, scheme behind it. It's not just, you know, just say this word or say one sentence or this one point.
It's very much complicated, that's right.
It's much complicated, right? It's multidimensional, as we say.
That's right.
So identifying that. The third one was researching for truth. Mm-hmm. And this is very important for all the soldiers of the soft war or the officers of the soft war, as the leader called them, to research for truths, right? It's not enough to have good intentions and just jump into the arena. You have to be well-researched, well-versed, and well-knowledgeable before you can engage.
That's right.
Right? So this research part, you know, how can we do it? So let's say if you're a college student or a university student, you're like, how do I defend the beliefs of Shia Islam? I'm studying accounting at my school, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is where, you know, I'm breaking it down for you, right? This is where you consult with the SMEs, the subject matter experts, right? Which includes revolutionary Islamic scholars and researchers.
That's right.
You go, you take time, you read their content, their works, right? Those who are the subject matter experts. And that's going to equip you, empower you. You may not have to do research from scratch for yourself. You can just refer to them, you know. And one of the subject matter experts, and the best one is Khud Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he himself.
Himself, okay.
Right? Take his arguments.
Yes.
Learn from him.
Okay.
The second is collecting relevant data.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we have these concepts, but we don't have the proper statistics. So when we do analysis, we are weak in our analysis, and sometimes we make mistakes. So collecting this relevant data before engagement, remember the fourth step is engagement.
Yes.
It's really important. You need to be properly equipped. Verifying your facts and figures, right? A lot of times we get data and we become so excited that we're so ready to engage, right? But, you know, it turns out that your data had discrepancies, right? It was not verified and it was not properly researched and confirmed. So verifying the facts and figures is important.
Okay.
Arranging your argument to come up with an engagement strategy. See, just having the data and dumping the data out is not going to do any justice to the cause. It's not going to serve the purpose. You have to have a proper engagement strategy developed, which takes thinking. Again, you refer to subject matter experts and see how they're doing it, right?
Yes.
And I'm talking to youth at this point, right? Scholars, of course, they have to research. They have you know, a lot of responsibility on their shoulder. Last but not the least is engage. And when you're ready with all this stuff, you preferably engage as a team. And I think in one of our programs, it was mentioned by you or Sayyid that, you know, engaging as a team is important.
Yes, teamwork.
Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei has said, "Kar bayad tashkilati bashad," that the work has to be a teamwork.
Yes.
Right? So this is something, it's a golden principle, not just in Jihad-e-Tabyeen, in many other areas too.
Yes.
Now, if you haven't done number three properly, which was what? Research for truth.
Research for truth.
If your research is not good,
yes.
I humbly request not to engage.
Okay.
Because you may create some more confusion otherwise.
Yes.
So have mercy on you and on the movement. You know, don't engage. Don't rush into it.
Don't you think Iran is alone in this field?
I don't think Iran is alone. Iran has the support of public, right? The governments may not be there, right? Because of the hegemony of the United States of America and the Zionists and the British and, you know, their the other European thugs, as we call them, right?
Okay.
They may be a conglomeration at the governmental level, at the governmental apparatus, but Iran has the support of the general masses. So here, with this Jihad-e-Tabyeen, what the leader of the Islamic Ummah has done is he has besieged.
Yes.
You know, I'm using a Farsi
mobilizes.
Word here. He has mobilized the masses, the ordinary people.
That's right. But Sayyid, you know, why am I saying that Iran is alone? Because we got so many Muslim lands and the countries nowadays around the Islamic Republic of Iran, you know, these Arab kings and aristocrats living over there. Okay, that's it seems that they are working for the enemy. I mean, a puppet in the hands of the enemy. Their slogans is better. Their normalization with the ties with the Israel is another step that they're taking.
Something I'm going to mention.
Okay,
afterwards.
So I do want to say, even inside the Islamic land, the key holders of the Kaaba and the Mecca, I mean, the Wahhabis and all these kings over there, okay, are hand in hand with the enemy of Islam. So, is it at all true to say that Islamic Republic of Iran is alone? Or no, maybe this Jihad-e-Tabyeen can also attract some people out of the borders of Islam. For example, Christians, Jews, those who are after the social justice seekers across the world. Those people who believe in the concept of the last savior, for example, okay? What's your answer to that?
Well, I think because the Islamic revolution was based on the pure Mohammedan Islam, and the difference between this country, which is Iran, obviously we know it as the Islamic revolutionary country, not the Iran, the state only the as in Iran.
Okay.
It's a revolutionary country and it's an Islamic revolutionary country. Therefore, we can see that because the main aim was to gain Islam, to have Islam in this country, to apply the pure Mohammedan Islam in this country. That's why we can see it is on the front foot. And we clearly see Iran being engaged with all these things.
Yes.
But on the other hand, we cannot say it is just Iran. other people, other countries are also involved, not at the government level. For example, you know, whenever something happens to the against the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam or the Quran, the very first people which we see who have you know, protests and all those things, it always happens in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. You know, the people themselves, not the government. I'm not talking about the governments right now.
Yes.
Within the people, we can see, and the Supreme Leader also has said, the belief that the Pakistani Muslims have, they have a firm belief on the Quran and the Prophet.
Yes.
You know, if someone says anything to the Prophet or the Quran, they, according to their beliefs, they do protest. Whether it's happened in the France or in any other part of the world, they stand against it. So we can see people doing that, but because the governments are not sincere, because the governments are following the, you know, the strategy that are set by the capitalist, by the capitalism.
Yes.
They are following a different system, yes, within the Islamic State, and they just have the name of the Islamic State. That's why we cannot see these countries, these governments, or the rulers of these countries being with the you know, on the front foot.
Yes.
On the other hand, we can see, like, for example, the example that you gave for the Ahle Saud and all those.
Yes.
they're just pretending to be the Muslims. You know, the land which was free of the idols, which was free out of the, you know, all the non-Islamic rituals and all those things, they are just doing that again. They just brought that again. They're like killing people. They finance ISIS. You know, all these things, this shows that they're not the true followers of Islam, but they are the puppets who have been, you know, plotted, mm-hmm, in these countries.
Yes.
And as Trump has said about them, that it is a cow which I milk.
Yes.
You know,
the
milking cow.
Yes.
So what you can expect from such a person, from such a ruler?
Yes.
So even we can see the war on the Yemen. You know, when the matter of Palestine comes, no one talks about it. No one raised their voices against
the media coverage is really weak
in the Israeli regime.
Yes,
whereas
Yemen,
it is only now we can see even the Israeli, you know, embassies being open, and their army men are being, you know, taken into the service for different countries.
In Jerusalem,
they're recruiting.
Recruiting the naval, you know, the naval chief has been recruited in Bahrain.
Okay.
I think
yes.
So when we see all these things, the very first enemies of Islam, the clear enemies of Islam, who has oppressed the Muslim Ummah from last 70 years,
mm-hmm,
and this history is not a less history. We can see what they have done, how they are controlling the whole media, how they're propagating the Islamophobia in the world. But the silence which we see from these Muslim, we can say, like,
yes,
states,
yes,
it shows us that the rulers of these states, they are so-called Muslims. They're just,
yes,
pretending to be the Muslims, not the real Muslims.
Yes.
And this is the matter. On the other hand, when we talk about the methodology and tools,
yes,
of the, you,
yes,
know,
the tools
jihad
are required,
of the clarification,
right,
The very first thing is, obviously, as brother has mentioned, the very good points that we should recognize the right enemy, mm-hmm, Dushman Shinasi. And we know that there's a term which is used in the Quran, and it can be used in all the times for the enemies, and that is Taghut,
mm-hmm,
rebels.
Yes.
Taghut is a good term for all the,
yes,
times.
Aggressors.
You know, thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen.
Welcome.
And Sheikh Ali, it was very kind of you for a nice explanation regarding Jihad al-Tabini and its definition. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/yen Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong and right.
weather often lies. Cause
I don't need
anyone, anything in life but you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip rallied on Friday to mark International Quds Day. Millions of people around the world hold rallies every year to mark this day, which takes place on the last Friday of the holy Muslim month of Ramadan, to support the people of Palestine. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and demanded an end to the Israeli occupation. The big event was organized by the Islamic Jihad movement.
Today we mark International Quds Day, while freedom fighters from Gaza, Yemen, Tehran, Lebanon and Syria, as well as in other places around the world, stand united for the sake of Al-Quds.
International Quds Day was declared in 1979 by the founder of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the late Ayatollah Khomeini, to drum up international solidarity for the Palestinian people. People at the rally expressed their gratitude to Imam Khomeini for his historic initiative.
On International Quds Day, we say to the whole world that we are willing to sacrifice our lives for the sake of Al-Quds. We also want to express our deepest gratitude to the Islamic Republic of Iran and Imam Khomeini for this important occasion in solidarity with Al-Quds.
Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque have a special place in the hearts of millions of Muslims around the world due to its religious status. Extremist Jewish settlers backed by Israeli forces have been violating the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in recent days.
Imam Khomeini's designation of this day is of great importance because it unites all resistance fronts for the sake of supporting Palestine and Al-Quds. These fronts are united today more than ever to help secure the liberation of Al-Quds.
International Quds Day is observed in over 80 countries around the globe.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians and has turned a blind eye to the Israeli violations against them for decades. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah held a rally to commemorate International Quds Day. Secretary General of the resistance movement Said Hassan Nasrallah addressed the gathering, stressing that the latest individual operations by Palestinians have once again shown the weakness of the Israeli regime, while proving that the Palestinian people have not forgotten their cause, but have rather become more hopeful in the liberation of their land.
The Palestinians told the Israelis over the past weeks that they cannot occupy Palestine and still enjoy security. The military confrontations have proven to be capable of achieving victories and defeating the enemy, and this path must continue. Liberating Palestine might not need great armies or weapons, but rather martyrdom fighters.
Said Nasrallah also warned the Israelis that any uncalculated move during their military drills in May will lead to a direct retaliation from Hezbollah.
When the Israeli exercises begin, the resistance in Lebanon will be at the highest levels of alert and readiness. We tell the Israeli enemy not to bet on exhaustion or hunger or poverty. Any act of foolishness will be met with an immediate response.
The leader of the resistance in Lebanon once more reiterated the regional strategy that any assault on Al-Quds will lead to a regional war. Palestinians in Lebanon also attended the rally in Beirut and held several gatherings in refugee camps. They also were vocal in asserting that they are with the pro-armed struggle.
We tell our people, the youth of Al-Quds, where 250,000 have gathered to fortify and defend this holy site. They are defending the dignity of the entire nation. Today we are commemorating this day not only in solidarity, but we are commemorating with the sword of Al-Quds. We are the children of the sword. We are the sons of the resistance and the front of the resistance. And with resistance, we shall liberate Al-Quds and defend human dignity.
Despite being away from their homeland, Palestinian refugees said their hearts and minds are with their people.
International Quds Day is seen by many across the globe as a day to denounce Israeli oppression and occupation of Palestinian land. For Palestinians in the diaspora, it is a day to renew their decades-long struggle to return to their homeland. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Fury in the streets of Pakistan. In their tens of thousands across the country, these supporters of Palestinian converged at the city center to show solidarity with wounded and traumatized Palestinians who face Israeli atrocities on a daily basis.
Decades after Imam Khomeini declared the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as International Quds Day, people across the globe, including Pakistan, continue to show support for Palestinian cause.
Protesters slammed what they called the criminal silence of international community and their failure to denounce the Israeli regime.
We've gathered here to celebrate Al-Quds Day, which was commanded by Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. According to him, it's the day of Islam, it's the day of God, and whoever does not celebrate this day, whoever does not commemorate Al-Quds Day, is an agent of Israel and an agent of the Zionist regime.
We are here because Palestine is under oppression of Israel.
Leaders at the rally also condemned the U.S. support for Israel and stressed upon the need for unity among Muslims to support Palestinian resistance.
As Muslims, our leader Imam Khomeini, he has urged all the Muslims to come forward on Jumat al-Bilaf to show our support for the Palestinians. We are here to show our solidarity with the Palestinian cause. Israel has illegally oppressed them and taken their land, which is legally theirs. And
we are here to stand for the people of Palestine. We are here because Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, has declared this day as International Day for the oppression in the world. Those nations who are being oppressed in the world, we stand for them here.
Speakers also expressed anger at some Arab countries over normalizing ties with Israel. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
Another Quds Day, another worldwide cry for the end to Israeli crimes in occupied Palestine. From Iran to Iraq to London, over the weekend, thousands turned up in the British capital to call once more for an end to Israel's crimes against humanity. And on Friday, a bus emblazoned with messages calling on people to join the campaign for a free Palestine. On board were representatives of the Jewish community and clergy who say Zionism has hijacked their faith.
Zionism is raising anti-Semitism over the world. Zionism with the acts by the killings, in the robbery of the land, in the killing of innocent women and children, this raises anti-Semitism over the world. So Zionism doesn't save Jews at all.
As a daughter of people who survived the Holocaust, it's very important that every nation should have learned by that and learned about freedom. And how dare Jews who suffered, how dare they do the same to the Palestinians as what happened to their parents? I think it's absolutely beyond disgusting.
Carol, a Jew in the eighth decade of her life, says she is confident she will see Palestine free in her lifetime.
And this is a sentiment shared here in London and around the world, that the last apartheid on earth is about to end and justice is just around the corner for the Palestinians.
Also passionate about the Palestinian plight are Black Lives Matter activists, who say their cause has historic links to the anti-occupation movement in the occupied Palestinian territories.
I think that one day Palestine will be free. And I think it's important for us to keep up that fight. You know, I remember, and I can only equate it to South Africa. They said it could never happen. They said black people could never be free. Nelson Mandela, the idea of him being a prime minister or president was impossible. And that's what they've said about Palestine. But we are still here. And the thing is, we're not going to stop fighting and campaigning and marching and protesting until they are free.
The annual Quds Day March comes in the wake of repeated attacks on Masjid al-Aqsa and Gaza throughout the holy month of Ramadan. Young and old were being targeted, hundreds were arrested, at least 150 Palestinians were injured and 19 killed. Calls are growing louder every year for the international community to force an end to the occupation, which is not a matter of if, but when. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Thousands of Yemenis took to the streets of Yemen's capital Sana'a to mark the International Quds Day and to voice their support for Palestinians. Senior officials and Palestinian activists were among the protesters.
We went out today to emphasize the centrality of the Palestinian cause and that Quds is the primary cause of Arabs and Muslims, and that the demise of Israel, which constitutes a cancerous gland in the region, is the basis for ending wars and conflicts in the region. The Zionist entity is behind the fragmentation in our region and is also behind the war and siege we're experiencing today against our country. The millions who went out today around the world will be the army that will liberate Palestine, God willing.
Protesters chanted slogans vowing to regain all the occupied lands all over the Arab world, especially Palestinian territories. They said the Israeli entity is only temporary and will end sooner or later.
Quds is a central and fundamental issue in our reality, our culture, and our nation despite the failure of the Arabs in the past periods. Today, there is a direct and promising trend, and generations have changed from the past. The axis of resistance has become more cohesive, and there is a wide coordination between the axis forces and the Zionist enemy, aware of the danger of these changes.
Every year, Yemenis mark the International Quds Day as they believe that it is one way of expressing their solidarity with their Palestinian brothers. Despite the tragic humanitarian situation in Yemen, people here say it is the responsibility of all Muslims across the world to stand by the Palestinian people in the face of the Israeli aggression until the liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana'a.
People have rallied in Damascus to mark International Quds Day. They took to the streets, making their way through Old Damascus and chanting slogans in support of liberating Palestine.
Our message is that this day is the day of all the Islamic nation. Today, everyone marched in Iran, Yemen, Iraq, and many countries. One day, Quds Day will be the day of victory in Palestine, thanks to resistance men.
As Syrians, we came today to show support. Quds is the axis. We express solidarity with Palestinians every year. I salute all Palestinians in Syria. We are against any Israeli aggression, whether on Syria or Palestine. Quds will be freed.
The crowds converged near the Grand Umayyad Mosque, where heads of Syria-based Palestinian factions and prominent resistance figures delivered words on this occasion. They expressed determination to the track of resistance to restore Palestinian rights and land from Israeli occupation.
This day makes Zionists shiver out of fear. It's a day for renewing vows for Palestinians. Palestine will remain the axis for the Islamic nation. The only path to save Palestine is by ending the Israeli occupation. It's a day of passing by the resistance to the next generation.
By setting this day as Quds Day and supporting resistance, Palestine, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and anyone who struggles against Zionism and imperialism, Iran is asserting once again that Palestine is a central cause for the Islamic nation.
Syria welcomed for years hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees and created refugee camps for them. It gave them equal rights to Syrians as a show of unlimited support to their suffering and struggle. This annual event has become a significant date for the Palestinian cause. Every year, Quds Day comes as a reminder of the importance of unity among all Palestinians to create one unified stance based on resistance against the Israeli enemy. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Thank you.
Voices of solidarity with Palestinians once again resonated in Iran on the International Quds Day. Every year, the occasion brings millions of people to the streets to condemn the Israeli occupation of Palestine and its crimes against the Palestinian people.
Israel has been violating the sovereignty of Palestine for more than seven decades. They have expelled Palestinians out of their motherland, but no one is talking about this in U.S. and Europe. So it's our duty as Muslims to come here and speak out about it.
I feel duty-bound to participate in the Quds rallies to remind the people of the world that Israel continues to kill Palestinians. Blatant rights violations are carried out by Israelis, but the UN is keeping mum.
This year's Quds Day is marked as Muslims are infuriated by Israel's fresh spate of raids on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Since early April, the regime has intensified its violence in the occupied Palestinian territories, with the old city of Al-Quds being the flashpoint. Israeli forces have also been cracking down on solidarity protests throughout the occupied West Bank. Tel Aviv says it seeks to arrest, quote, Palestinian terror suspects, something which is described by demonstrators here as laughable.
What would it make Israelis if Palestinians are terrorists? Israel has for decades been slaughtering innocent women and children in Palestine and continues to seize their lands. How dare they call Palestinians terrorists?
You know, the Palestinians were just there praying, the women were there praying, they attacked the women, the Israeli soldiers attacked the children. Innocent people, they were beating them up, arresting them, just because of being there and praying.
Demonstrators here call on Western leaders to adopt an all-inclusive, non-selective approach toward human rights, one that would see no difference between the suffering of Palestinians and Ukrainians. Quds Day was first designated in 1979 by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who called on all Muslims to hold pro-Palestine rallies on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. Over the past 2 years, Quds rallies had been called off due to the coronavirus pandemic, and this is the first time in 2 years that the occasion is marked with physical participation.
4 decades since Iran introduced Quds Day, the occasion has turned into a global pro-Palestine rally, with even Jews around the world participating to denounce the Israeli occupation and raise awareness of the Palestinian suffering. These people say if it wasn't for Quds Day, the Palestinian cause could have slipped into oblivion. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Hundreds of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip attended a big ceremony on the International Quds Day. Each year, people around the globe hold rallies on this day, which takes place on the last Friday of the Muslim month of Ramadan, to express solidarity with oppressed Palestinians. International Quds Day was declared in 1979 by the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, to drum up international solidarity for the Palestinian people. Addressing the event via satellite, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Chief Major General Hossein Salami vowed to continue Iran's support for the Palestinian people and their resistance. This year's International Quds Day commemoration comes amid rising tensions in Al-Quds as extremist Israeli settlers backed by troops desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque in recent days.
On International Al-Quds Day, we thank Imam Khomeini for designating this extremely important day. Imam Khomeini has called on the Islamic nation to return to the correct path towards Al-Quds, because Al-Quds is the common denominator and the core issue for all Muslims.
International Quds Day continues to symbolize the unity of Muslims around the world, and it also ensures the Palestinians that they have not been forgotten by their fellow Muslims.
Imam Khomeini designated International Quds Day to support Al-Quds and Palestine and to assert the great importance of resisting the Zionist occupation. Today, we're closer than ever to liberating Al-Quds because of our resistance. Our resistance only grew stronger following the Battle of the Sword of Al-Quds.
Leaders of Palestinian factions expressed their gratitude to Imam Khomeini for his historic initiative and called on Arab countries to follow in the footsteps of Iran and support the Palestinian people.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been the role model in supporting the Palestinian people and their resistance, as well as in supporting Palestinians in Al-Quds. The solidarity that we see on Quds Day is a solid proof of Iran's unwavering support for the Palestinian people.
Occupied by Israeli forces in 1967, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice.
Every year, International Quds Day draws worldwide attention to decades-long suffering of Palestinians. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Afghans in the capital Kabul have held a conference titled Quds, the Axis of Unity of the Islamic World, to mark Quds Day and to support Palestine. Speakers condemned Israeli aggression against the oppressed Palestinians and called for the freedom of Al-Quds.
Quds Day symbolizes the unity of Islamic countries against global arrogance and is aimed at supporting the liberation of Palestinian territories from Israeli occupation. Occupied Al-Quds is the first enclave of Muslims and a territory of Muslim Palestinians. The freedom of Al-Quds makes the greatest wish of Muslims and freedom-seeking people of the world.
In order to help end the plight of Palestinians, Imam Khomeini not only initiated Quds Day, but also asked for Muslims' gathering and the axis of Al-Quds. He said Muslims will succeed in freeing Al-Quds if they come together and firmly stand with Palestinians. Today we stand with Al-Aqsa Mosque defenders and condemn Israel's aggression.
Participants vowed to never leave Palestinians alone in their fight for regaining occupied territories and defending the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They also called on Muslim nations to take a strong stance against the Israeli crimes, denouncing normalization of ties with the regime.
Recently, we witnessed some Arab countries shamelessly normalizing ties with Israel. They should know that it is a big mistake and that the regime will never become a friend of Muslims. In fact, we should stand with Al-Aqsa Mosque defenders and don't let enemies' plots weaken our intention for supporting our oppressed brothers.
Like elsewhere in the region and beyond, people in Afghanistan mark International Quds Day every year, taking the opportunity to voice empathy and solidarity with Palestinians. Despite struggling with many difficulties in their own country, Afghans have never forgotten the plight of Palestinians. People here say Muslims should gather on the axis of Al-Quds and fight arrogance. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Global capitalism is emerging from the coronavirus pandemic with more inequality, more authoritarianism, more militarization, and more civic and political strife. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by William I. Robinson, author. This article is published under the heading Global Capitalism Has Become Dependent on War Making to Sustain Itself. This is the first part of the article. In late March, the Biden administration, citing the Russian military operation, called for a $31 billion increase in the Pentagon budget over the previous year and on top of an emergency appropriation weeks earlier of $14 billion for Ukraine. Prior to the operation in late 2021, the U.S. government approved a nearly $800 billion military budget, even as in the same year it ended the war in Afghanistan. Almost overnight following the Russian operation, the U.S., European Union, and other governments around the world allocated billions of dollars in additional military spending and sent streams of military hardware and private military contractors into Ukraine. Shares of military and security firms surged in the wake of the crisis. 2 weeks into the conflict, shares of Raytheon were up 8%. General Dynamics up 12%, Lockheed Martin up 18%, and Northrop Grumman up 22%, while war stocks in Europe, India, and elsewhere experienced similar surges in expectation of an exponential rise in global military spending. Missing from the larger picture was the centrality of militarized accumulation of endless low and high intensity warfare, simmering conflicts, civil strife, and policing to the global political economy. Militarized accumulation refers to a situation in which a global war economy relies on the state to organize war making, social control, and repression to sustain capital accumulation in the face of chronic stagnation and saturation of global markets. These state-organized practices are outsourced to transnational corporate capital, involving the fusion of private accumulation with state militarization in order to sustain the process of capital accumulation. Cycles of destruction and reconstruction provide ongoing outlets for over-accumulated capital. That is, these cycles open up new profit-making opportunities for transnational capitalists seeking ongoing opportunities to profitably reinvest the enormous amounts of cash they have accumulated. There is a convergence in this process of global capitalism's political need for social control and repression in the face of mounting popular discontent worldwide and its economic need to perpetuate accumulation in the face of stagnation. Wars provide critical economic stimulus. They have historically pulled the capitalist system out of accumulation crises while they serve to deflect attention from political tensions and problems of legitimacy. It took the Second World War to finally lift world capitalism out of the Great Depression. The Cold War legitimated a half century of expanding military budgets, and the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, the longest in history, helped keep the economy sputtering along in the face of chronic stagnation in the first two decades of the century. From the anti-communist fervor of the Cold War to the so-called War on Terror, then the so-called New Cold War, and now the Russian operation of Ukraine, and the transnational elite led by Washington have had to conjure up one enemy after another to legitimate militarized accumulation and deflect crises of state legitimacy and capitalist hegemony onto external enemies and contrived threats. The events of September 11, 2001 mark the start of an era of a permanent global war in which logistics, warfare, intelligence, repression, surveillance, and even military personnel are more and more the privatized domain of transnational capital. The Pentagon budget increased 91% in real terms between 1998 and 2011, while worldwide total state military budget outlays grew by 50% from 2006 to 2015 from $1.4 trillion to more than $2 trillion. This figure does not take into account the hundreds of billions of dollars spent on intelligence, contingency operations, policing, bogus wars against immigrants, terrorism and drugs, and homeland security. During this time, military-industrial complex profits quadrupled. However, focusing just on state military budgets only gives us a part of the picture of the global war economy. As shown in 2020 book, The Global Police State, the various wars, conflicts, and campaigns of social control and repression around the world involve the fusion of private accumulation with state militarization. In this relationship, the state facilitates the expansion of opportunities for private capital to accumulate through militarization, such as by facilitating global weapon sales by military-industrial security firms, the amounts of which have reached unprecedented levels. Global weapon sales by top 100 weapons manufacturers and military service companies increased by 38% between 2002 and 2016 and can be expected to escalate further in the face of a prolonged crisis in Eastern Europe.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanahu.
Just as faith from the every outset was the source of the movement's success, your massing together because of the faith in your hearts led your crushing victory over satanic powers. This is a favor, a special favor from Allah, the blessed and exalted. And so the calculations of all the people who had only materialism in mind and did not reckon with spirituality turned out to be wrong. Their calculations were based on material and worldly considerations and without any regard for spiritual matters. People had nothing except their cries of there is no God but Allah, and Allah is the greatest. And also their clenched fists and the firm faith in their heart.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the month of Ramadan. In one of his speeches, when he talks about the Quds, he says that, "I call on all Muslims and the Muslim governments to unite in order to get the hands of this occupier, Israel, and its supporters of Palestine, and call on all Muslims around the world to name the last Friday of the month of Ramadan as the Quds Day and declare the international solidarity of Muslims in supporting legal rights of Palestinian Muslims, inshallah." So in this part of his speech, he's talking about the importance of the last Friday of the month of Ramadan, which he named as the Day of Quds. And generally they say Yawmul Quds. The Day of Quds is the day of solidarity with the Palestinian nation. We all must show this solidarity with the Muslims, with the Muslims of the Palestine. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi. Sallallahu alayhi. Must get united against the occupier, the Zionist regime who are oppressing the Palestinians for many years. It's been many years. And who are oppressing them, who are killing the innocent kids in the Palestine, who are demolishing the homes of the native people who are living there, the ones who are natives, the Palestinians, the Muslims in that land, and they have occupied all these things. We need to show our solidarity to the Palestinian Muslims. We must raise our voices against this occupation. We must raise our voices against the Zionist regime and those who are supporting these Zionist regimes. All the powers in this world, all the countries who are supporting the Zionist regime are all rebels. They are all the occupiers of Palestine. They all are the oppressors. And Islam is against the oppression. Islam is always with the mazlumin, with the oppressed ones. And Islam is with the mustadafin. Therefore, Imam Khomeini is also saying that I call on all the Muslims of the world, no matter where you live. If you're a Muslim, then you must raise your voice against this occupation. If he calls on all the Muslim governments to unite against this Zionist regime so that we can have this Muslim land free from the occupation, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.